Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. We are recording this on Monday, November 26th, 2012. That's UTC, as I always do. For those of you in the U.S., it's really Sunday night. Sunday night, the 25th. But, you know, whatever. I count it as the 26th, damn it, because
Look, we're on very different time zones. I've seen that we've got people downloading in very different places.
Yeah.
UTC is a good number to use.
Yeah, okay. There you go. There you go. Yeah.
All right. So.
And I'll tell you, that we've moved the regular time we record this show from earlier Sunday to Sunday evening it's more convenient for Yvonne, and it's not bad for me either. And, you know, right now, though, I'll tell you, like, I woke up this morning. Mm-hmm. And I woke up a little bit. Well, first of all, Alex had a little bit of a rough night. He wasn't feeling too well. So I was up off and on all night. I woke up a little early. I was up at like 7 a.m., 6, 7 a.m. Yeah, local time here. And I did a couple things. I read some news, blah, blah, blah. I took my morning shower. And then then Alex, my son, was up like a couple seconds later. Mm-hmm. And I have not had like 5 minutes of peace all day long. And
what has he been doing?
Don't get me wrong, guys. I love my son.
But I can't
play trains for 18 hours straight. Okay? And after the second or third hour, Chuggington gets a little old. Okay? It was nice.
All right.
So just
need to find him some independent entertainment.
Well, he's actually does a lot better than he did. Let's say he's three now, and he does a lot better at this kind of stuff than he did when he was two. So, like, he'll play on his own, and he'll mostly leave me alone. But, you know, some days are worse than others, and if he's not feeling great, he wants to be a little bit more attached. And so, like, even when he's playing on his own and he's playing with his trains, he wants you to be in the room right nearby. And, you know, if you try to walk away, he brings you back. And, you know, his show, and he's also getting better. We've been working on taking turns who gets to watch their shows on TV.
Okay.
So in between the Chuggingtons, I got to watch a couple of my shows, and that was kind of cool. But, you know, but anyway, it was, you know, it can be tiring sometimes. And you know, meanwhile, his mom's doing homework, and he's leaving his mom alone. He wants me, not his mom right now. So whatever. Anyway, so just before we started the show, I bundled him into the car with his mom, and they're going to a movie.
Oh, there you go. Okay,
so I have the next couple hours. I'm doing this podcast, and then hopefully I'll be free for a little while longer. I'll get myself something to eat. I'll sit down. I'll relax a little. You know, see, you know, that's how it goes. You know, and you know, your kid's a couple months old at this point. You know, just wait a couple years. It gets more fun by the day.
He is right now, as I look at on the one screen on my computer over here, sleeping. Very sound.
There you go. Okay. So anyway, we do have a real show today. So we're going to talk about a few things today. One, we're going to spend the entire hour talking about what we will do if we win the lottery.
Right.
Yeah,
I already get the divided up the money.
So yeah, yeah.
Sam told me about the $425 million Powerball jackpot. Okay, so
there you go. Now,
yeah,
right. And
sure. Yeah. Right.
I don't know why you're planning for it, Yvonne. It's all mine. It's all mine.
You know what? Today, like at 12, I decided I took my wife's car to the car wash. Okay, and sometimes when I go there, I will buy the lottery or not. I will say that today I decided, fuck it. I ain't buying it. Fuck it.
Anyway.
I mean, I do gamble some. I've won money. I mean, I've had relatives of mine that have won the lottery. I mean, it's not like it's not impossible. I mean, I'm not saying millions, but at least six figures in the lottery. Not chump change. Don't get me wrong. Okay. So it's not like, you know.
That was relatives of yours.
Yes, relatives of mine. So, you know, I mean, it's not like it's impossible. I mean, don't get me wrong. So, you know, but
it is a tax on the mathematically illiterate. However, when it gets this high, I'll throw $20 down.
I mean,
what the hell?
I mean, whatever. There are things that are, I mean, I will, I mean, of course, there are better, some gambles that are better than others, obviously. Okay, all right, you know.
And by the way, the lottery is not a great gamble.
It's not. Not at all. No. I mean, like, the roulette is better than
The lottery is good if your actual intention is to donate to the government.
Right.
That's what it's for. It provides services.
And on the off chance, you might win.
Well, there's the whole entertainment value of you buy the ticket and you spend like a day thinking about how you would spend the money. And that's kind of entertaining. Cool,
you know, when you think about it, you're like, okay.
Anyway, that wasn't actually going to be one of our real topics. Our real topics, there was an article in the New York Times this Sunday on the Obama administration putting together a legal framework around how and when to use drone strikes and targeted assassinations and things like that. I don't think they actually use the word assassination, but you know, and part of the tone of the article was they were doing this specifically because they realized, hey, wait, Romney might win. Anyway, so anyway, that's topic one. Topic two, Egypt. Topic three, American dream. We just have some, what does it mean? Sort of a vaguish question. And then we'll talk a little bit about Black Friday.
Yes.
That's our topic. So, let's jump right in on, drones. I take it you read the article
story. I mean, today I was a little bit, you know, I was a little bit surprised because nobody had mentioned it before, but not totally surprised at when I read it, because it'd been a topic of discussion, that we've had multiple times about the use of drones and how we're just going about and fucking like just knocking off people.
Well, and you know, we've had a lot of talking. I've been one of those that criticizes this, not because we're using drones as a technology. I mean, because I've said before, like, there's a lot of complicated issues here, and like the question is, what would we be doing instead? So, like, you know, yes, we're doing targeted drone strikes, but if we couldn't do that, would we actually be doing nothing, or would we be like, well, you know, carpet bombing the town that somebody was in?
Well,
you know,
if you think about it, like years ago, I don't know if you remember in the 90s that there were a couple of times where we had been after Bin Laden.
Yep.
Right. And this was before, you know, September 11th. OK, because Bin Laden had been implicated, if I remember correctly, it was in the embassy bombings in Africa. Mm-hmm. OK. And so the U.S. is actively pursuing Osama Bin Laden. And what we said were Tomahawk strikes against locations where he was. I mean, and let's face it, I mean, a barrage of Tomahawks hitting a location where he's at, I mean, that's going to leave a lot of collateral damage, okay? That is not a pinpoint weapon by any
stretch. No, it's not. And we targeted, you know, infrastructure and support and things like that as well, that, you know, factories, and one of the celebrated cases was, it was supposed to be chemical weapons or something. It turned out it made aspirin or some, I don't know. A lot of fuzzy details, and it's a long time ago, so I don't really remember.
It was like a baby milk factory in Iraq or something like
that. Well, there was the baby milk factory in Iraq that probably really wasn't, but then there was something in Sudan, and the specifics don't really matter in this case, because we're doing it a memory of like 20-year-old events, but like...
We may be wrong in some of the specifics, so thank you.
But the key here is we've had a change where instead of saying, you know, over the years things have become more and more and more targeted to the point where now we really are targeting individuals, and which is something that has not generally been a common tactic in the past. Now, don't get me wrong, it certainly has not been a non-existent tactic. Going back as far as World War II, I mean, or even further back than that, you targeted generals, you targeted people in the command and control chain. You know, people wouldn't say that you were officially targeting the president of the country you were at war at, but hey, if you got them, you were happy. You know, so But, you know, the technology has improved to the point where you really can target people more specifically. We've got the whole idea of the kill lists that are being generated of, you know, terrorists that we want to get. And if we get them in our sights, we'll take the shot. And so there's this whole process defined where it's not just, hey, we're going after Al-Qaeda and any place, you know, it's more like we've got this list of people and we want to get these people. And so the question comes up, okay, at that point, if they are not a clear and present danger in the process of committing an act where this can be said to be defensive, you know, should this actually be a legal process rather than, you know, an at-war type process, you know, or even if it's not a legal process in that you hand them, you arrest them and you take them in and you put them on trial, even if you're not doing that, should there be a process that's heavily constrained so that the president of the United States can't on his own essentially say, yeah, this guy's bad, kill him? Which is essentially what we have right now. And the precedent has been set, by the way, that also includes American citizens. So far, American citizens overseas, but, you know, there were a couple of American citizens killed by drone strikes in the last couple years. And so the question is, what's the process here? And apparently, the gist of this New York Times article, and do you have it in front of you, Yvonne?
No.
Okay, I'll get it in front of me in the next couple seconds, but because I want to give the reference. But the key here is, the Obama administration, according to this article, basically last summer realized, hey, wait a second. You know, there's a chance that Obama won't win. And then, hey, guess what? We've been setting all sorts of precedents, giving the president and the executive branch all kinds of power to act unilaterally without any review, without any guidelines, without anything other than us thinking it's a good idea, and hey, we're the good guys, so we trust ourselves, but oh my God, if Romney gets in, we don't want him to have this kind of power, and so let's start writing down some rules around how this thing should work. And apparently they were in a mode of rushing to get this stuff done before January 20th. After the election, it's sort of like, ah, okay, we can take our time. So before I go on further about this, the article is "Election Spurred a Move to Codify U.S. Drone Policy." It was published November 24th, so actually Saturday, in the New York Times. And it's by who's the author of this sucker?
I don't remember, but you got it.
Scott Shane. Okay. Got it. Who is also, by the way, the same correspondent who wrote the article last month or the month before on sort of these kill lists and how they worked and things like that. Look, the bottom line I have on this kind of thing is every time I see a situation where, and this applies both to Republicans and Democrats, because I remember talking about this when George W. Bush was president. Whenever you see somebody doing a policy that you know they wouldn't trust in the hands of the opposition, like, it boggles my mind. You know, it's like, really? I mean, like, the fundamental rule for this stuff should be, if you wouldn't trust your worst political opponent with this power, then you shouldn't have it either. Because that's how things work. The parties change, the things go by. You don't know what the situation will be like 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, but you're setting the precedent there. You're setting the precedent that, hey, the president has this power. And you can't be there saying, well, no, I'm saying I have this power and I trust myself and my judgment and the people around me. It's not that. It's you are giving that the role, that power, no matter who holds that role in the future. And that includes the possibility of people coming to power who you disagree with vehemently, who don't share your own values, who will not use that power in the same ways you would. So you damn well should want significant restrictions on power and want there to be checks and balances and want the ability for, you know, to make it so that no one person can make the decision, that it has to be done in some sort of, with some sort of process or some way that, that has other ways of dealing. I don't know. I rant about this stuff all the time. I'm continuously disturbed by the constant increases in executive power, and it boggles my mind that the people actually in the role are so short-sighted that they can't see that, hey, you know, but someday there'll be somebody in power who I don't like.
But look, if you go back a little bit more, and you did touch on this, look, I mean, the President of the United States ordering the assassination of somebody, okay, indirectly or directly, okay, has been something that's been going on as far as I remember. I mean,
probably as far back as the country goes.
Yes. Okay. It is not a new thing. The fact that, you know, we have a massive troop deployment that has gone on now. I mean, this is the longest, I think, you know, ongoing
ever.
Yeah. I mean, in a country, you know, where we are in Afghanistan, we've been over there for 10 plus years. Well, it's causing this to be a situation
In a combat situation, of course. We've been in Germany longer, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, this is longer than Vietnam lasted, I think, at this point.
Correct? Oh, yeah. But, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, let's face it. During the Vietnam War, we were doing a lot of this stuff as a country, just, you know, differently. Snipers, assassins, other things, et cetera, and so forth. I think, honestly, that if we had the technology back in the 60s, you bet your ass they would have been using the drones, okay, just as we are right now. Now, what I'm saying for that, I'm not excusing this in any way. Is it something, a policy that I am, you know, agreeing with? I think that I'm trying to separate a little bit, you know, the fact of whether, you know, us going after and assassinating specific people with lists, you know, is something that
is it substantially different.
Exactly. Is it substantially different because we did it back then using, you know, people individually targeting? I mean, or now we have this technology that, you know, we're using differently? I mean,
I frankly don't think the technology makes a difference. The question is, To me, the question is all one about checks and balances, and even if...
I think my point is that we've been doing it since then, and I don't really... I really see implementation being a little different, but not the actual act, okay?
Mm, yeah.
Maybe that's me.
I think the difference is we're better at it.
Yes! Shit. Oh, for God's sakes. You know, that's not exactly something that I was striving our country to be better at.
I mean, and I come back to what I said at the beginning too, like, you know, would the alternative be, if we couldn't do these targeted strikes, would we be doing more all-out wars?
Well, I guess in Vietnam, I don't know, we sent B-52s in there, we were fucking carpet bombing the shit out of them.
Well, exactly, and it's Hardcore History by Dan Carlin. I forget when the episode was. It was a few months ago. Specifically talking about things like the expectations of civilian death in war. And it's changed dramatically. I mean, you know, you mentioned Vietnam, certainly World War II. I mean, not only Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but we carpet bombed the hell out of all kinds of cities.
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, firebombed Dresden, for God's sake.
The strategy was explicitly one of making it so painful on the civilians that the war would end. Right. And there's all kinds of justification you can give of, yes, we're killing lots of civilians, but we're actually going to kill less civilians because this will make the war shorter. That's the justification that was given for all these kinds of things. Who the fuck knows if that's true when you examine the counterfactuals? I don't know. And so what we're doing now, it shows how much the standards have changed, where now we're arguing about whether it's okay to kill a couple guys. Whereas,
right,
you know, in the 40s, you know, there was almost no debate whatsoever that it was absolutely fine to decimate a city.
Right.
All the civilians included.
Absolutely. No problem.
And so But nevertheless, I think this particular issue isn't about any of these specifics. It's about where do you draw the line for what the president can do on his own judgment without review by anybody other, I guess, other than the elections every four years.
Yes.
Where do you need Congress to step up and play the role? When do you need laws governing how this stuff works? When do you need the judiciary to be involved? When, even if it's within the executive branch, do you need checks and balances within the executive? Although I think that's no good. Like, whenever I hear somebody saying, oh, we're putting in a process, but it's all within the executive branch, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's bullshit.
That's a bunch of bullshit.
You have to have someone who's actually independent of the president being able to put a check and balance in. Otherwise, it's not really a check and balance. And I think what we've seen time after time is this ratchet effect where every presidency almost, there have been a few exceptions, but every presidency grabs more powers and does more things unilaterally. And this is precisely the kind of stuff that the founders tried to protect against in the Constitution, with the whole idea that Congress and the president and the courts would have independent interests and would act as checks and balances against each other. But we've seen that slowly deteriorate over time with more and more power going to the presidency. And for the most part, the Congress and the courts sort of rolling over. So I don't know. It's probably time to move on unless you have any closing words on that.
No, I just think that, you know, you're right that the presidency has consistently tried to grab power as much as they can, like, you know, during the extended period of time.
And it's not just the presidency grabbing power, unfortunately. It's also the Congress and the court specifically saying, we don't want to deal with that. Let the president do it.
Well, I think I'm going to say more Congress than the courts. But,
yeah,
you know, be that as it may.
But even the courts, there are a number of things that they say, you know, this isn't us.
Well, a lot of times what I've seen the courts is go back and say, well, you know what? This Congress should write a law to state about this. And Congress gets it back to them, and they're like, we're not going to do anything.
Yeah, I know. That does happen. But yes, they have been known to say, this is up to the Congress and the president. We're out. You know.
Right, which is fine, okay? But then we've got a Congress that...
Yeah, I know. But all three should be like... The whole notion of the balance of powers is all three should be jealously protective of their own powers, and they should be bumping heads about what they control.
In my perspective, I think that that certainly the judiciary has been far more protective of their fiefdom than
Congress. Congress is just pitiful.
Yes.
Okay, let's take a break. Those profound words, Congress is just pitiful. And I think they should be the strongest of the branches, really. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back after this. We'll talk about other things. We'll be right back. Okay, here we are. And before we move on to our next topic, Yvonne, I looked this up while we were talking. You mentioned that the war in Afghanistan was the longest war to date. The war in Afghanistan, as of Wikipedia right now, who knows when it was last updated, blah, blah, blah. 11 years and 1 month.
Okay.
What do you think is number two?
I'm going to have to say it's Vietnam.
Number two is Iraq.
Ah, well, okay. Yeah.
And actually, you know, this Wikipedia page, I must say, somebody needs to fix this because it sucks. Because they have, like, you know, they have the number in years, like 11.1 years, and then right underneath they have years and months. And the order is different depending on which of those numbers you look at. For instance, it says the Iraq War is 8.7 years, which is 8 years, 9 months. Then it says Vietnam was 8.75 years, which was 10 years and 8 months. Okay, one of those is wrong.
Huh?
Yeah. So somebody's...
Well, wait a minute. But based on what you just said, Vietnam was 8.75 versus 8.75.
I know. Something's wrong here.
I think that's right. I thought Vietnam was slightly longer than Iraq. I thought Vietnam was 10 years.
So there's an asterisk. So, like, 10 years, 8 months, according to the... years and months, 8.75 according to the years. They have it third. I don't know what's going on here. So I should get another source because the Wikipedia. So
basically, I mean, but bottom line is the longest we've been out there. I mean, this engagement has been the longest we've had troops deployed in a combat setting because it's not a formal fucking declaration of war, as we all know. Okay. Or no, maybe not. Okay. But I'll just clarify. Okay. That we've been out there, so yes.
So anyway, Iraq and Vietnam. The information here is contradictory on this one Wikipedia page. Somebody needs to fucking fix it, and it's not going to be me because I don't have time. Next, what's number four?
World War One.
The American Revolutionary War.
Oh, well, at
8.4 years. What's number five?
Does this include, like, the Civil War and stuff?
It's a war.
Civil War?
Civil War would be number five. And just to round out the top ten, World War II at 3.7 years, Korean War at 3.1 years, War of 1812 at 2.5 years, the Mexican-American War at 1.8 years, World War One at 1.6 years.
Yeah, that's right. World War One was longer, but we didn't get into it.
Yeah, this is only the length of the American involvement
in the
war.
Right. Yep.
And that rounds out the top ten. So, anyway, moving on. Egypt.
Okay, so, you know, well, so the president of Egypt decided last week to just do a power grab. basically, I feel like he's like Mubarak 2.0. I mean, at this point,
except not secular. Well, Mubarak wasn't secular. Mubarak wasn't secular, quote unquote. But this guy is the Muslim Brotherhood has a much more religious orientation. Let's put it that way.
Well, but here's the thing about this. I mean, even take that out of the equation. I mean, I think he's being even more dictatorial than Mubarak was. I mean, Mubarak in name had the assembly assemble. I mean, he fucking disbanded the damn thing.
Now, according to the president and the administration in Egypt, this is all temporary.
Right. That's what he says, yes. It's just that, you know, it's just a little bit confusing right now, so I just want to, I don't know.
You know, I haven't read enough. I'm not expert enough to have in-depth opinion here other than, you know, one of the things we talked about way back when the revolution was happening in Egypt was, you know, don't get too excited too fast. Wait to see what happens next.
Right. Unfortunately, I mean, I feel like it's just fucking deja vu and more of the same shit.
One difference that we'll have to see how it plays out is the public has been is somewhat more cognizant of its own power.
Yes.
And
yeah, because they went at straight out, and after he said that, they started.
They're protests in the streets.
Oh yeah.
And you may see that there's a tension there in terms of if. What's it, Morsi? How do you say his name? I don't know.
Morsi.
If he goes too far, then he may get a situation that's he can't control.
And I mean, you know,
he's going to be pushing the limit. It's, you know,
as I'm looking at the news, like right now, a number of his ministers, you know, have resigned. He got threatened by a strike of the nation's judges. There was a massive plunge in the stock market. I mean, there were some protesters hit the streets. I mean, I don't think that, you know, yeah, he sent this out, and I don't think people are just sitting down and just taking it at this point. So
we'll see. It's another place to watch. I mean, we've got several countries out there that still have, you know, a lot of very dynamic things going on, and Egypt is one of them.
I think that one of the things is, I just find it substantially frustrating that, you know, in our world in the last 50 years, okay, it's been amazing the lack of progress that economically and even socially countries that have not been under, I mean, the democratic countries have not been able to make substantial progress. The newer ones, I mean. You know, this is supposed to be a democratic takeover. This guy got voted in. Okay, we're going to go make some progress or whatever, whatnot. What the hell happens? This shit. Okay? All right? I go and I think about other countries where supposedly the people voted in this guy in order to bring him progress, for example. It's a different example from the Middle East, but I'll go and I'll switch over to like Venezuela, for example. They elected Hugo Chavez, okay? All right? On the supposed argument that, you know, he's going to bring our country forward. Well, I mean, the country is fucking virtually bankrupt. Okay, all right, that's what he's done. I mean, there's been no advance for anybody. You go to Argentina, you get a lot of the same shit. You know, and I'm like, a couple of people making the argument, okay, maybe Mubarak and Hussein were dictators and evil and shit and whatever, but even a lot of people in Iraq will go and say, fucking preferred it back when Hussein was in power at this point.
Because at least things got done and, you know, and in the case of Hussein, it was a, you know, it was... There was sort of enforced toleration between ethnic groups and religions and things like that. The same was true of the old Yugoslavia. You know, it was under dictatorship, but it was kept together and peaceful and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, there are trade-offs in all of these things. And you in many cases, you can't jump straight from, you know, whatever authoritarian system is in place to a liberal Western democracy in like a day, you know? And frankly, a lot of these folks, by the way, don't want a liberal Western democracy. And that's part of the whole problem. And you also see, by the way, and a couple of people pointed this out as well, that, you know, you hear all this commentary and as if the U.S. was, you know, cheerleading the democratic movement all along, and we're this big democratic crusader against authoritarianism.
Oh, fuck a bullshit. We were giving all these dictators money, for God's sake.
Exactly. Like, a lot of these dictators in this region, why were they there? Because the U.S. put them in power and propped them up and kept them going the whole time.
Or at least helped them when they got into power. We certainly weren't like trying to knock them down.
The U.S.'s standard policy throughout the Cold War, and to some degree up through today, is that we prefer a stable totalitarian regime that gives us access to their natural resources and gives access to our businesses to an unpredictable democracy.
Sure. Think about Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah. Saudi Arabia to this day. I mean, if there's an authoritarian regime on the planet, come on.
It's the Saudis.
I mean, there are plenty of others. Well, yeah, the Chinese actually have opened up quite a bit in the last few decades. But
no, but still.
In certain areas.
It's still certainly a dictatorship. I mean, it's not, you know. Right.
They've opened up in certain ways, but not politically, not in terms of, you know. But look, there are lots of places around, and the policy consistently is, Yeah, and I'm not sure if this is wrong or not, but the policy consistently has always been, hey, you know, if we can work with the guy, then, you know, who cares if he's a dictator or he's a king or he's an authoritative,
you know,
whatever.
You know what the worst thing is? That, you know, I mean, it's difficult to...
Including good old Saddam Hussein, by the way, until he got on our bad side.
Absolutely. Yeah. But one thing that I was like, we're remarking in a discussion we had about Latin American dictatorships, okay, over the last 50 years. The two countries that actually had some of the worst dictatorships over the last 50 years are one of the ones that had some of the most economic and social progress of the last 50 years. The two, namely, being Brazil and Chile, okay? Mm. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I know that it's, I am not excusing civil rights abuses or any of that stuff by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, don't go there. But I'm not going there. Don't interpret that. But the one thing that I gotta let people remind sometimes, this country after the revolution wasn't really a straight up democracy either. Okay, all right. The reason why we have the Electoral College is because we didn't allow direct election of the president. Okay. Yeah. All right, for a very long time in this country,
It was very intentionally designed as a republic, not a democracy, and I think people forget that at their peril, because I think there's some damn good reasons why it was a republic and not a democracy. But
there was
whatever.
Some very damn good reasons, okay? And you know, I think that, you know, we keep like all these people have this idealism of this. Oh, this democracy is just going to flower in the Middle East and everybody will be just going around the streets and just, you know, like, I don't know, releasing doves in the air and like smelling the flowers and bullshit, okay? What happens in a lot of these times is that fucking like countries are messy. You go and like you let a whole bunch of fucking rambunctious people just go out there and fucking like start going at it. And what happens is chaos, okay? All right? En masse. Okay, you get, in the worst case, you know, I keep talking to people, you know, somebody has reminded me of, they were saying, well, I want a totally, like, government sucks, I want no government. So somebody posted
go to
the other
Somalia
day,
or
right,
something.
Go to Somalia! Yeah. You want to find out what no government is? Hey, go over there, and you'll find out what the fuck no government is, okay? You got to pay off people in order to have protection. You got to have your own personal army in order to make sure nobody takes your shit. Anybody could go in and just, you know, I mean... It's just, I don't know. I mean, I know that it's the popular notion that if you let everybody just be out there by themselves, we're all just going to be all nice to each other and nobody's going to steal whatever. And fucking practice and never fucking
works. And look, there are a couple things that people have to, like, you know, we have like this fundamental notion that democracy is a good thing. And I don't generally disagree with that. I like sort of representative things that have a few layers in between the people and the actual power to sort of protect against the vagaries of public opinion. However, in general, I think the idea that the people should be in charge of their government is a good thing. I'm not disputing that at all. However, you got to keep in mind, by the way, if you bring in democracies in a whole bunch of countries, hey, guess what? Some of them will elect people you don't like. Right. Some of them will advocate policies you don't like. Morsi in Egypt is one more.
Morsi,
not the singer or whoever Morsi.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is one example, and there was weirdness in terms of the way the runoffs worked in that election. But whatever, you know, Hamas on the West on Gaza, where we were talking last week, is another example. Freely elected government.
Yes.
And we're like, oh shit, there was an election and they picked people we don't like.
Exactly.
Well, guess what? That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And if you truly believe in, you know, self-representative government, then you've got to also agree with the fact that, hey, sometimes people elect people you don't like and that's okay. And if they do, and you have to deal with it kind of.
And so you wind up with chaos in Egypt, and I don't know what the deal is. But let's face it, this is the situation over there. Is it any better? I mean, right now, are you going to tell me that it's better than when Mubarak was there? I think not at this point. It certainly has slid backwards substantially, so... And I don't see an upside right now anytime soon. So...
Yeah, I think we have to go back to what we said right after the revolution. There's still a wait and see going on here.
Yeah.
So. You know? So... Okay, let's take a break. New topic. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
And here we are. Here we are again. So, Yvonne, when we were talking about topics for this show, you mentioned that you'd had some conversations recently with people about the American dream. And yeah. What did it mean and what did people think about it? How do you want to start this? Were there specific things you had in mind, or you just want to ask me and we'll start there?
No, I actually wanted to start with you at least. So what, because I researched a little bit as to how the phrase came about a little bit, or what people thought about it and how it's evolved a little bit.
Here are the things that come to my mind. Being able to sort of pull yourself up from your bootstraps, no matter where you start in life, get to a point where you have a good job that pays the bills, leaves you relatively not struggling to make ends meet, and ideally you can have a little bit of your own property, like you own your own little plot of land, your own little house, you can bring up your family, and in the end you set up a situation where your kids are going to be better off than you were. Those are sort of the key elements to me of what it means. One, it's sort of the egalitarian, it doesn't matter if you were born poor and without like a head start in life, this is still all attainable. And then, it's not that everybody can, I don't think the American dream is everybody becomes a billionaire. I think the American dream is that everybody can get to the point where they can give a comfortable life for themselves and their family and make it so that their kids have an even better shot than they did.
You see, I had that same vision, okay? Like, pretty close, okay? I thought of, people being able, to, if you work hard, okay, you're responsible at your job, so you get to own your own home, you get to have your car, you get to send your kids to college, you get to be able to retire at some point, And enjoy the fruits of your life, okay? Those things. I'm the one thing that I guess the reason why I was thinking about it is because, I've got so many people talking about the current tax debate, right? And raising taxes on richer Americans. And all these people saying how this is you guys are killing the American dream. And I'm like, when the hell did the American dream become being a hedge fund billionaire? I'm like, I don't get it, okay? I mean, the American dream was honestly a middle-class dream, a strong middle-class dream. Not being a billionaire.
I mean, I guess I can see the argument that part of what people mean by it, the American dream, is that everybody does have the chance to become that multi-billionaire. But it's certainly not that everybody becomes a multi-billionaire. I think the key, the key to an American dream is everybody has that opportunity potentially. But I think the important part isn't the shot you have at becoming a billionaire. The important part is that you have a shot at sort of the comfortable life for you and your family.
Yeah, I think that that's actually the thing that I keep looking at. And I guess I just, you know, don't understand how somehow it got co-opted into, you know, into this. And how people, I mean, argue that raising marginal tax rates on richer people is somehow counter to the American dream. I mean, if I look at what you talked about and what I read people defined, I mean, I don't know. I always had this vision of, you know, maybe like the 1960s, 50s, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s, all these people that came back from
everybody with their little picket fence houses and
yeah, and
going to school on the GI Bill and having a little family and yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I thought. And I'm like, you know, I was curious, and I'm like, you know, we have all these, you know, what's the counter to that is right now, there was a commercial recently about a program in order to try to help returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan if they're homeless. Okay. Right. All right. And I'm like, you want to talk about a juxtaposition? I mean, when we had people coming back from World War II, I mean, we had people coming into prosperity. People coming into, and a lot of it, by the way, was with programs that the government had in order to help these people get back on their feet. And now we're talking about people coming back from a war and being homeless. I mean, I unemployed and homeless. I mean, it's just.
I mean, you undoubtedly had some of that in World War II too, but clearly the expectation was vastly different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that we had it, but I mean, you know, but our economy was so, well, I mean, let's face it, our economy was so strong, like right afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, because of, you know, because of a lot of external factors. I mean, basically because industry in Japan and in Europe was decimated and allowed us to, you know, basically take advantage of that at that point. That, yeah, I mean, there were quite a lot of jobs, and I know that the circumstances are different, like right now. But I don't know. I guess it's just. I guess I just found it somewhat frustrating that, you know, I don't know. The people could equate the American dream with being a fucking billionaire. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, being a billionaire. I mean, really? I mean, you know, look. If I was, I mean, you know, well. I mean, somebody asked me.
Well, and from the argument you were saying, it's not just about being a billionaire. It's being a billionaire who is unimpeded from becoming an even bigger billionaire under any circumstances.
Right. Because let's face it, we had people like in the last 100 years that became billionaires, despite the fact that, hell, we had times that our top tax rate was 90%. And, you know, there wasn't all these people like going out there yelling that, you know, we're killing the American dream back then. And now, you know, we talk about that all the time. I don't know.
I'm sure the people who paid that 90% tax rate still didn't like it.
I'm sure they didn't. I mean, but you know, of course, like everything, I'm sure there was a lot of loopholes that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that made it that some people didn't have to pay that. But, you know, yet at the same time, I mean, I guess the point is that tax rates really over the last 50, 60 years of income have really come down over the last 50 years. And I don't know. I think that at this point, you know, we said that, I don't know, we this whole negotiation about the fiscal cliff is going on. I don't know. I'm hoping that, you know, just because we go and like we take from some people that have more and basically those people make more money now than they ever did doesn't mean that we're killing the American dream. I mean, especially if I read it how people have interpreted it over time, it's just lately people have been talking about the dream in a very different way, I guess. Just something that I'd never heard before. I mean, or at least historically wasn't like what when I grew up, I learned. I mean, I remember true story.
Well, meanwhile, even the American dream, as we've discussed it, as I said, my definition was, there's a lot of statistics that are saying that's getting harder and harder and harder, and less people are able to achieve what I just said.
Yeah, I know. It is. But that's why I'm like, you know, if you're going to talk about making things and policy changes that that impact people's ability to make the American dream, why don't we actually make that? I mean, I was saying, I remember like one of the first times I came to travel in the U.S. when I was a kid, I must have been like 7 or 8 years old. And one of my one of my mom's aunts married a guy from that was from I can't remember from where, what state, but you know, he wasn't from Puerto Rico, and they settled in a home in Connecticut. Okay, and I remember coming to visit his house, and this guy worked in IBM, and he had worked at IBM for, I don't know, 25, 30 years. And, you know, he was very close to retirement. And I remember the one thing that I just will never forget about it is, you know, this is a guy that worked, and he wasn't like a super, like, senior guy or whatever, whatnot. But certainly because he worked for 30 years, you know, had saved enough money that he had a very nice home in a very nice place with, you know, lived very comfortably and whatever. And he actually spent, I remember that I was 70 years old, and he knew that I liked computers very much as a child. And he always instilled in me how he wanted me to actually work at IBM, okay, which I never did, okay? I worked at HP, close enough, okay? But you know, he did talk to me about that. But I remember the one thing that he talked about it was because specifically, I mean, he talked about how it fulfilled his life, how it helped him. He talked about how it helped him achieve the American dream. And he was not a billionaire, is my point. This was just a person that had, you know, worked very hard and was able to achieve the things in life that allowed him to have a happy family, that allowed him to have a good home, allowed him to get an education for his children, and do all those things, I guess. And I don't know. I guess that's what's more important than anything, and I'm hoping that people keep that in mind. So.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. It's it is harder, I guess. I mean, it's always taken hard work and blah blah blah. But I don't know.
Those guys had defined benefit pension plans back then. You know, you were guaranteed a retirement. We don't.
Yeah, I mean, the death of the defined benefit pension plan makes a big difference in the security of folks as they get older. And you talk about the guy who has been at a company for 25 years and retires there. That's a rare bird these days.
That's a rare bird these days, and now even if you do it anyway, it's not like before. You work 25, 30 years, and like even like public employees right now, let's face it, one of the biggest problems that we have is that because, you know, we can't afford even those plans that we, you know, public employees still have them for the most part, and they're unaffordable. We can't pay for them either.
Right.
So, you know, well... Okay.
Oh, well, let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about shopping. Yeah, but Yvonne and I, shopping.
Yeah, all the shopping I did. Yeah, sure.
Okay, we'll be right back. And yes, we're here. So I take it from your comments at the end of the last segment, you didn't rush out at midnight somewhere for Black Friday deals.
Well, let's start with the fact that all the Black Friday offers
started on Thursday.
Earlier,
yeah.
And even like some places even earlier than that, number one. And no, I have done absolutely no shopping for Christmas whatsoever.
I will tell you.
We did a list. Uh-huh. Okay, all right, of who we're going to get gifts for, okay? And we were working on a budget,
okay?
All right, but I did not move anywhere beyond the budget stage at this point.
I will tell you, for the last few years, and my intention was to do exactly the same thing this year, I have done, you know, a thing where I started my Christmas shopping on December 1st, on Black Friday, December 1st.
Thanksgiving being substantially earlier than a few years back. Yep, makes sense.
And I would buy one gift a day until it was too late.
Okay.
Okay, that was my general plan. And also, close family only. So, like, in years past, I had a larger list I sent to a whole bunch of people. The last few years, it's been like... You know, my immediate family, my mom, dad, my sister, you know, that kind of thing.
And I mean, and that's understandable because, like, for example, I mean, I used to do that as well. But my close family, just my nephews, for God's sakes, I got 11 nephews. I mean, you know, Geez, I mean, okay, 10 years ago, I had nobody on the fucking list. Yeah, I'll buy gifts for, you know, buddies and everything. But I'm like, shit, I made the freaking list. I got 11 nephews, for example. And my wife has 4 brothers, okay?
Uh-huh. All right?
You know, so that's like, and of those 4 brothers, 3 are under the age of 18, okay? So it makes it, I mean, it's just, I'm like, fuck. I'm like, I'm making the, make the damn list every year now, and it's like, motherfucker. I mean, really?
Yeah. And so anyway, but I'll tell you, this year, for the first time, and as far as I can remember, I actually have already done one piece of Christmas shopping. And it's because I already had a specific thing in mind for a specific person. I'll say it was my dad. And the item in question, I noticed, was back-ordered. And, like, the first week of November or something, I looked at this thing. I noticed it was back-ordered with expected delivery, like, the week before Christmas. So I was like, oh, shit. If I want to get this for him, I have to go ahead and order it now.
Okay. All right.
And so I ordered it. And I ordered it to go directly to his house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a notice this last week saying, oh, guess what? It's coming early. Oh. And I'm like, you fuckers. You know, because, like...
Oh, well, you know, he's an adult. He'll be okay.
I redirected it. I now have it, and I will send it off to him later. But, because, you know, like, my dad's family is one of these... They'll, like, open things as soon as they come, no matter what. They won't wait till Christmas Day. So I'm like, oh, God damn it. And, you know, so I yanked it, and I got it here. So I have it in my closet waiting, and I'll ship it at some point. But that's the earliest I've ever started Christmas shopping. Meanwhile, I have my wife, who, like, probably started on the day after Christmas last year. And, like, all year long is just like, oh, that would be a good Christmas present, and, like, grabs it whenever, you know, it comes up. And so she's got, like, a closet somewhere with stuff for Christmas already in January, you know?
Well,
so.
No, we really are. I mean, I don't like the whole shopping process.
Oh, I have the last few years, I have sworn that I will not enter a mall.
Now, listen.
Between Black Friday and Christmas Day.
Wait. I'm talking about shopping process in general. I'm not talking about going to the mall.
Yeah.
I'm talking, I don't like the whole shopping process in general, period.
Okay.
Online, offline, however the hell you want. I just don't like it. All right? Okay? So I just, you know, like right now, I mean, honestly, all we did was that list. I really avoided looking at the list. I know that I looked at the overall budget and I thought that, I told my wife that that we were being a little bit too cheap. Okay, all right.
Okay.
So I actually went and decided that we should at least double the budget that she came up with, which I'm shocked that I had to do that. I mean, my wife was actually on the extremely frugal side. Okay. I just thought, no, nah, I mean come on, I can't be this damn cheap. So
I think we've never actually gone through the process and defined a budget. I've thought about it a few years, but it never ends up happening, and we just sort of gut feel it.
We
probably end up spending too much, honestly.
We've done it the last few years, especially just because the list of mine, it's just the list of people, has just gotten so long. I mean, I happen to have relatives that definitely procreate substantially. I mean, I'm like, you know, geez. I mean, you know, it's retarded.
And it's kind of the kids that matter the most in these kinds of things.
Right.
Yeah, because the little kids expect, like, a whole bunch of new crap under the tree and,
right,
you know.
Right.
And maybe they shouldn't. I've got several adults, by the way. Like, I mentioned I'm getting something from my dad, but for the last few years, you know, my dad has been sort of like, no, we got too much stuff. We don't really want anything. Please, no, please, you know, and I've had a couple of people, you know, say, you know, look, no gifts. If you must do something, donate to this charity and things like that. But, you know, I still like giving an actual thing, you know?
I like nice, thoughtful things. I got to be honest with you. I prefer, you know what, I am like right now, look, if I want something, I can go buy it. Okay, all right. You don't need to buy me something. I mean, unless somebody's going to show up with a Ferrari into my doorstep, going to say it's my gift, okay, all right? I mean, really? I mean, unless that happens, I'm like, for the most part, I'm kind of covered, okay, all right? I do like it when people buy me practical things. Like, for example, like my relatives buy me clothes. And I'm like, you know what? And they know my taste in clothes, and usually they'll get me stuff that I would like. And since I hate shopping... Okay, it's not a bad thing because I go through Christmas and I'm like, hey, look, I got new shirts. I'm going to tell you something. Surprisingly, it was a year ago or so. I don't know. They bought me shoes, but not just that. They bought me shoes the exact size that I wear, okay? Uh-huh. Which I'm shocked because they did, like, I was like, wait a minute. How did they fit perfectly. And I'm like, I didn't even have to go to a damn store to try them out, for God's sakes. It was, like, brilliant. I'm like, so, I don't know. I like that. Okay, so a practical gift like that, yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'll, you know, a shirt, yeah, I mean, you know, a couple of shirts, I mean, always wear a shirt, always wear something like that. But on the other side, I mean, I like thoughtful, like, gifts. I don't know, like, I don't know, one year I got this picture of me and my brother framed that it was from a long time ago that I got as a gift, like, for example, and that was, like, very nice because it's, like, you know, I don't know, it's something that nobody else can make, you know what I'm saying? Right.
Yeah.
So little things like that, that are sentimental like that, I like that. Okay. I like those. So, you know, that's kind of cool. I prefer those gifts, to be honest with you, more than anything big or extravagant.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I mentioned.
Oh, yep. Wait. And I won't turn down alcohol as a gift either. Okay. Because that will be consumed. No problem. Okay, all right, you know, it's like, look, you want to buy me all the bottles of wine or scotch, good scotch or anything, whatever, I'll accept those all very gracefully, okay, all right.
Well, and you know, I've mentioned before, like, I was doing the whole, like, hey, on Christmas Eve, my no iPad rule goes away, right. And so the way I'm doing this because of the timing, I'm like, I'll ask my wife to give it to me as a gift.
You know?
And I have made my decision, by the way. I'm getting the big one, not the little one.
You're getting the big one.
I'm getting the big one.
I gotta tell you something. This whole thing about the size thing with the big one, you know, I carry my iPad with one hand all the time and read on it all the time.
Okay.
I have the first version. And I don't find it that uncomfortable. Okay. I mean, I don't find it uncomfortable, period. Okay, to do that. Okay,
would you hold it and, like, read it while you were, like, waiting in line somewhere
at
a coffee shop or something? Okay,
sure.
So anyway, regardless of the iPad thing, we can talk about that another day. Yeah, but you know, the interesting this is probably going to be the biggest gift she's ever given me. But okay. On the same hand, it, you know, it's my money. Right now, she doesn't work. I do. It's all my money. So, like. I could have just gone out and bought the thing.
Let me correct you. It's not that it's
your money. It's our money.
You earned the money. It's your. It's
yes.
You know,
it is our. It is our money collectively.
That you.
You are absolutely right. Thank you for the correction. But you know the point is, like, I could have just said I could have just gone out and bought the thing. But I'm like, you know, this is a big ticket item. Let's make it the present. I don't expect anything else. I don't expect anything else for, like, the next couple of things, you know? We'll do it that way. But anyway, now, of course, I have no idea what the hell I'm getting her. I have to still think about that. And my daughter has a wish list, so I'll probably get a few things off that. We'll see. Get some toys for the kid. Yeah, other people are harder to shop for, but whatever. So before we wrap this up, yeah, we ended up talking about our Christmases. Any thoughts on the general phenomena? I think the whole, like, Black Friday thing is bullshit. As you mentioned, it's a whole lot more spread out, and this year Thanksgiving's earlier, so what the hell does it actually mean? Because people all talk about the impact on retail. I mean, clearly, regardless of Black Friday specifically, you know, the run-up to Christmas is clearly the biggest retail time of the year by a large fraction. I've heard people say it's as much as 50% of the total income that most retailers make in the year.
That's accurate.
Yeah. You know, so any other larger thoughts on the phenomena? Does it look like people are spending this year?
Well, nobody knows yet. And the reason why nobody knows yet is because of precisely what you're talking about, the fact that they made the run-up so much bigger and all this other stuff that right now they're not sure if the numbers are comparable. Okay? So, honestly, preliminary information says it is better than last year's, but some people threw out 10 caveats along with it because they said it is, but yet at the same time, we don't know if we can really compare it. So that's where we're at, like, right now. We'll really know at the end of the holidays, but I do think...
And everybody's going to panic about the fiscal cliff and not spend money, right?
Ah, bullshit. Nobody gives a fuck. I think that, you know, it seems like people have been freer with their wallets than they have been in years past. So...
Yeah.
That's where we're at, like, right now, but you know, it really, even last year, okay? Really, like, I know that this is a big start to the whole thing, but honestly, you gotta just look at the whole period, because it's just, I don't know, just because these couple of days, maybe they were, like, bigger, I just don't know if it really will make a whole overall.
And people talk about Black Friday, but it actually isn't the biggest day, is it anymore? I mean, it was for a while, but hasn't
still,
it been
spread? I think it still is, yeah, because you gotta remember that so many people are off on that day compared to other days that, yeah, I mean, it is the biggest shopping day of the year itself, that day, just because, let's say, a lot of people have that day off.
Yeah.
It's right after Thanksgiving, it's a long weekend, they have the day off. So, the answer is, as far as I know, yes, that is still the biggest shopping day, period.
Yeah, okay. I guess, you know, but I don't know. I don't understand the people who run to the stores. I don't care what the fucking deal is.
I mean,
like,
there is nothing that they, I mean, look, they could have all the women in there naked inside the damn store, for God's sakes. And I'm not standing in line for an hour to buy anything. I don't care. Okay,
all right. Let alone, like, fight a freaking crowd to run to the back of the Walmart to get the DVD player that's, or Blu-ray player or whatever that's hot this year, that's going to be sold out if you're 5 minutes late and is, like, $10 cheaper than the other one.
Right. I mean, forget it. Forget it. I mean, you got to be, I know that there are certain people that make this whole an entire strategy where they make this list and they target a couple of things and they want to save some money and whatever. I get that, but you know what? I'm sorry, I'm not that cheap.
Well, of course, part of it is getting the people in for that one thing and then they buy other stuff.
I know.
Loss leaders, all that fun retailish stuff.
Yes.
Right.
Well.
Yeah. People are, like I started to say earlier, for the last few years, I've made essentially a pledge to myself that I will not even enter those kind of shopping areas between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. It's just, like, I don't like crowds. I don't like the thing. And, like, and in the last couple of years, I've ended up there for one reason or another for short periods of time because there was something that I had to do. But I have, you know, I'm not going to go there voluntarily because I want to shop. You know, first of all, you know, you know me. I do almost all of my shopping online, and I have for, like, more than a decade.
Yep.
But like, even if I do have to go to a store for something, and you know, I go to stores, pick stuff up occasionally throughout the year, but, like, during this particular season, it's a madhouse. I don't want to go there unless I absolutely have to.
Right.
Now, there are some pretty Christmas decorations and some pretty Christmas music, and okay, some of that's okay, but for the most part, it's crowded, it's hectic, there are lines. To, like, even park at the damn mall, you have to circle and wait for a spot because everybody's doing their fucking shopping.
We got valet over here to take care
of. There's some valet occasionally, too, but, like, it's just a mess. It's a mess. Why subject yourself?
I don't know. Sometimes I want to go, like, there are certain things that I go to buy that I would like to see in person before I actually buy, so therefore that's the only reason. But,
no, well, I'm not, that is absolutely true, and if I'm buying something in January, like, before I decided which iPad I wanted, I made 4 visits to physical Apple stores to play with the damn things, and probably totaling, like, several hours of playing with the damn things, and Yes, and I presume my wife ordered online. She probably ordered on Friday because there was a sale and Apple had it for $40 off.
That's right. They did have a sale on the iPad.
I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing. In the end, I still buy online, and if I still hadn't made my decision, I would think two or three times before going back to the mall to the Apple store this week. Because it'd be a mess.
Well, okay. Well, but you made your decision. You made the call. You went big.
I went big. There you go. Size matters.
Yes, absolutely. Well, all right. Well, this is a wrap. We're done. We're out.
Yes. Thank you all for tuning in. Next week, if all goes as planned, we'll talk about Windows 8. And other things, perhaps, but Windows 8. Because we have somebody coming on who joined us before to talk about political stuff, Bruce, Bruce Morton. But we'll talk about Windows 8 next time if all goes well, and whatever else is in the news.
I still haven't tried Windows 8, by the way, and I thought about it, and I'm not upgrading my image, the Windows 7 image, to 8 like at this point. So. Yeah.
And anyway, so thanks for listening. Email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, with any questions, comments, thoughts, all of that kind of stuff. Share us on all your social media, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Later, Yvonne.
Bye-bye.